Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Radio.com Sports presents Big Time Baseball with MLB insider John Heyman and former major leaguer Tony Gwynn Jr.
And then there were two. We are now down to the final two teams. The World Series is set after really two wonderful seven-game series between the Rays and Astros, Dodgers and Braves. Welcome into Big Time Baseball. I'm Tony Gwynn Jr. alongside my partner, John Heyman. Big show for you today. We'll review the NLCS, ALCS. We'll also give you our predictions for the World Series. Our special guest today is A.J. Preller, Padres GM, will join us a little later on in the show. But remember, you can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Tony Gwynn Jr. He's at John Heyman. Follow this show on Twitter. Follow us at RDC_BTB. That's Big Time Baseball. Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review Big Time Baseball on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts. I should welcome in my partner, John Heyman. John, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. We are excited. We got the World Series upon us and very exciting LCSs. Two of them both went to Game 7. So that was great to see for baseball. It was a little closer than I think you and I expected, but let's give ourselves credit. Pat ourselves on the back a little bit. We did both get that round completely right, and we're on a roll now. So if anybody bettors want to listen, we might be helpful to you.
We could be very helpful to the pocketbook, but don't hold us to that, because we have been. Well, I know I've been brutal in some of the previous rounds. So that being said, John, these were, as you mentioned, two terrific LCS series. Let's start with the Astros and Rays. It looked like there was no such thing as karma there for a second, as the Astros completely erased the 3-0 lead the Rays had built through the first three games. They force a game seven, and then the Rays, as we know them, showed up again and were big in big moments. Obviously, Randy Arozarena ends up winning the MVP of the series. Just a terrific series between both teams, John.
Incredible. And, you know, we'll give Houston a little credit here. We don't want to give them too much credit, as, of course, we know all about the scandal and all that. And, you know, some people were kind of ripping me on Twitter for kind of rooting for the Rays to win because, you know, I'm not a Rays fan. I'm not generally against the Astros, but I think this was the year not for the Astros to not be in the World Series again. I know some people love that storyline, the potential storyline of Astros and Dodger rematch from 2017. And people like a villain, and maybe their ratings would have been a little bit higher than the Rays will be, because you know, people aren't, the Rays are pretty anonymous as a team generally, but they are a great baseball team, and it's going to be great for us real baseball fans. And it worked out fabulously. Dusty did a great job. I think everybody really got to see Dusty at his best in the press conferences and getting his team and sticking with Greinke and making the moves and guiding that team that had a losing record to where it went. And obviously the Astros have terrific talent. We never doubted that. They certainly have resolve. We give them credit, but let's not give them too much credit this year. We understand that there was a scandal. They were at fault, and they did go unpunished in terms of suspensions and things like that. But let's give the Rays credit today, because great job by them. The defense is fabulous. They do have that stable full of 98-mile-an-hour throwers that Kevin Cash talks about. And Randy Arozarena, you mentioned, The hottest hitter on the planet, even hotter maybe than Corey Seager. It's close to a tie at this point, but that's what gets you a win, either timely or great hitting by one guy and pitching and great defense. And so let's give them credit.
Yeah, no, listen, is clearly how the rest of the country feels about the Astros. I think there's a good amount of people who do feel like that. But you got to respect the fact that they were able, despite all of that, when it came down to the important games, they locked it in. And Carlos Correa deserves a lot of credit. I just felt like he was the one kind of leading the charge on this whole thing. You saw him not only producing at the plate, but in mound visits, things like that. He seemed to be the voice of the team. And you got to respect that. As a former player, I respected the fact that despite all the noise, they just kept going out and playing. But ultimately, the Rays come out on top. And the thing that stands out to me is their defense and their pitching. Their defense was amazing. And it wasn't just one guy. It was a team of guys playing terrific defense. And I've gained a newfound respect for Kevin Cash. Just the way he talked about the game, he understands that that ball club cannot afford to give up very many runs. So they have to limit it with their pitching and defense. And it really came to the forefront in that series with a number of different plays defensively that they made to really stop the Astros from winning those games, John.
You're right on Correa. Fantastic. I don't want to spend too much time on the Astros. As I said, we'll give them credit another year. They'll come back next year maybe, although they're going to have a tough offseason. They're not going to have Verlander next year either, and they're going to lose Springer potentially. So anyway, enough on the Astros and the Rays. Their defense, fantastic. Wendell, incredible at third base. I'm not going to say Brooks Robinson or Greg Nettles, as I saw some say, but he made every single play that you could make and certainly frustrated Bregman to no end. Adames, I didn't realize what a great defense player he is at shortstop. And Kiermaier, we all knew about. He's one of the best center fielders in the game. But they have a good defensive player at every position, and that's a major advantage. So we got to see a little of the reason why they – continue to win, and not only did they beat the Astros, a team that had a losing record, they beat the Yankees. Let's not forget that. They did win 40 games. Amazing. Kevin Cash is a great manager. I might have stuck with Snell a little bit longer and Morton a little bit longer. I'm old school. I love the sticking with Greinke. That worked out. You know, if a guy's pitching well and he's a noted great game seven starter like Morton, and if he's your ace like Snell, I'd stick longer. But hey, who am I to question Kevin Cash? He's probably the manager of the year in that league. Yeah, I would make one little correction there. Nobody gets paid with the Rays. You're right. You're right about that. Offense generally gets paid, but their payrolls, what is their payroll? 70 million. Third from the bottom at this point. So they're getting production. Guys, nobody's getting big pay. Rosarena is making the minimum. And he I don't want to say carried them, but without him, they wouldn't be here.
Yeah, and that's kind of the point is because you can't pay free agents to come in because you can't afford to, you got to find your scouting department has to be on point with identifying guys who can play the positions and play them at a high level. And clearly the Rays have done that. All right, let's slide over to the NLCS, where we saw a Braves team come in and really punch the Dodgers in the mouth. They get off to a 3-1 lead, and then you started to see the inexperience of Atlanta come into play, and you started to see the Dodgers start to find their ground offensively, and they come back. They force a game seven, and I don't know if I can say enough about Mookie Betts. I think it's very rare that you find an outfielder that isn't a center fielder that can be regarded as the best outfielder in the game. But Mookie Betts is that, and I don't think it's really even close. He can do literally everything defensively. We know what he can do offensively. I just thought he really led the way. I know he didn't necessarily have the big hits for that Dodger team, but he did something to either save runs or get them a chance to score runs almost in every single game, John.
Yeah, I mean, on the way the series turned. I think you're right. Experience did play a role there. There were some base running mistakes. I think the Dodgers made one or two of them themselves, but certainly they seem to be more experienced. And in the end, that helped them win. And I mean, you know, they have so many great offensive players. I think I can't remember another team. I might be wrong that I felt have three of the best 10 players in the game with Betts, Bellinger, and Seager. And I feel that the Dodgers have that. So they should have won. The Braves offense, fantastic. Ozuna, incredible. Freeman, he's the MVP. Acuna is a great player. Did not have a great series in terms of his hitting, but he showed you he can do it other ways with the stealing. They have a great team. They have a great team, but to come up short against the Dodgers, nothing wrong with that. You know, the Dodgers are just fantastic. And, you know, it would have been something else if they didn't make it again. But look, let's give Dave Roberts credit there at the end. Urias staying in. I mean, he had a look in his eye. It's not all about analytics. I know I'm old school. I appreciate analytics. Look, the Rays are in there. The Dodgers are in there. They're two analytically driven teams. But sometimes you got to go with your gut and you've got to look and see what's going on the field. And Urias had it. And I questioned why not start Urias. And, you know, maybe this was their bigger plan, was to finish with their better guy. I mean, I think Dustin May is going to be a star. He throws 100. Ball moves, but, you know, certain guys have that look in their eye in October, and Urias had it in previous games, and I think they had to have noticed that, and maybe that's why he got the three innings and certainly got at the end, and they didn't go to Jansen or Clayton Kershaw, which I think that was the right move in the end. I don't think I could have watched if Kershaw came in there and given it up again. Who's probably the best pitcher of the last 50 years since Koufax, but it happened too often in the postseason. My opinion on this is that all the managers, and they've had excellent managers, they all defer too much to Kershaw and overuse him in the postseason, and he's not going to be the one to say, you know, I'm tired or take me out or whatever. If you look at his stats, the first six innings, he's pretty darn good, and they leave him in too long. And, of course, that wouldn't be the case with a one-inning stint, but I think the managers bear some of the responsibility for his postseason problems. But I was happy to see Dave Roberts do the right move and get there. And now we have the Davey and Goliath matchup. We have East versus West. We have the $75 million payroll versus the $225 million payroll. So we have a great storyline. I know there are people rooting for that Astros villain storyline. I'm sorry to disappoint you. I like this one better.
Yeah, I don't know if I like this one better. It's either way, I think it's going to be a good series regardless. First, I want to start with the Braves because you mentioned the base running blunders. I mean, that fourth inning where they had runners on second, third, and they end up not scoring anything was such a momentum changer. And you can even go back to the first inning. Dustin May getting out of that, only giving up one run. Really just those type of mistakes in the postseason, especially this deep in the postseason, always come back to haunt you. Then Ozuna, you mentioned how well he played. I know they want to bring him back if possible, but he just seems like a really good fit there. And, you know, sometimes we talk about players, you know, chasing the big money. Sometimes you got to find your comfort zone. It just seems like he is a perfect fit for that Braves lineup. You'd like to see him come back. To that sixth inning, Kike Hernandez is a bat I thought was one of the best pinch hit at bats under the circumstances that I've ever seen. I mean, he get to fight off some of those pitches he fought off in order to get that fastball that he hit out. From a hitting standpoint, I'm a nerd. I enjoyed that at bat so much coming off the bench, seeing him execute like that. And then you mentioned Urias. He did have that look in his eye. And I think we've seen it really in both series. Managers going with their gut instead of going with the analytics, at least in these two particular series, it seemed like the gut won out more than the analytics. But that doesn't necessarily mean it goes like that all the time. But I'm with you on that one, John. I think sometimes it's in the best interest of the team If managers pay attention to what they're seeing sometimes, not necessarily what the numbers say, but we do have a good series lined up. I like this series a lot. I think you got strength versus strength on this one. And I think it's a good series. I think this series goes six. I think the Dodgers end up winning it ultimately, and they get this huge monkey off their back that's been hovering over them since 88. But I do think this is going to be a tightly held series. And when I say six, the Dodgers win, I know this series can really go either way based on how both teams are playing right now, John.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned a rough round. I don't remember that you had earlier with your predictions. I think your predictions have been pretty good, but you're a very modest fellow. But I'll agree with you on this one. I think Dodgers in six. You know, I see some people out there predicting the Rays. I don't blame them. The Rays have been amazing. You know, they were the best team in the American League this year, and they won 40 games, and now we're seeing exactly how they did it. And I don't blame anybody if they take the Rays, and there's certain advantages that they may have. I mean, I think their defense is probably better. Their bullpen is more solid at this point. They have those stable full of 98-mile-an-hour throwers. They're in good shape pitching-wise. They got a day extra day off. I mean, the Dodgers are the best team in baseball, and they won 43 games for a reason. So I'm gonna go with that with you. And plus, I picked them at the beginning of the year, as I usually do. I've always been wrong, at least since 1988. So I can't jump off of it now. You said a couple interesting things there. Kike, I wanted to mention. I mean, he does some surprisingly good things. I was at a game in Wrigley, a playoff game where he hit three home runs, and you know, he's pretty clutch. He's got a crack record against Madison Bumgarner as well. I mean, he's not a star on this team. He's a complimentary player, but he's had some huge moments. On Ozuna, you're absolutely right. You know, he just seems much happier. And in fact, I tweeted that he never seemed that happy in St. Louis. And of course, people in St. Louis, and I love St. Louis. My dad lived in St. Louis when he was alive, and it's a fabulous city. But that being said, they are very sensitive about their city. The mere fact that I said is my impression, he didn't seem that happy in St. Louis. Of course, you know, one of the St. Louis writers had to jump on that with some quote that he got from Ozuna about how he would have been happy to go back, and how he would, you know, if they took the qualifying off, if he, you know, would have been fine if he took the qualifying offer. Well, he didn't take the qualifying offer anyway, but that had nothing to do with whether he liked St. Louis or not. He, you know, it's my impression watching him, he just seems thrilled to be with the Braves. It may not be the city, it may be the team, whatever. That's my impression, and I'm sorry to the entire city of St. Louis, which I do like personally. So don't call me and tweet me or whatever on that.
Listen, John, your eyes are not deceiving. I see the same thing you're saying. When I watched him play this year, and then watching him play throughout the playoff run, he just looks like a happy dude out there. And those are usually the guys that end up producing well, and he certainly has. And he took I love the fact that he took a bet on himself. He takes the 1 year offer, basically a prove it deal, and he certainly has proven a few interesting facts about this World Series before we move on to the inside corner. First time a neutral site World Series. Both the games will be played at the Rangers' new facility, Globe Life Field. This is the fourth time in the wild card era since 1995. The teams with the best records in each league will meet in the World Series. So this is, as I said, strength versus strength. Obviously, the Dodgers are back for the third time in four seasons. First team to do that since the New York Yankees in 2000, 01, and 03. And this is the second appearance for the Rays. All right, let's move into John Heyman's inside corner. And John, we got a lot to cover here. Let's start with each individual team, and the teams that you have, and what they're looking to do GM-wise/president-wise. Let's start with the Angels.
Okay, yeah, a lot of people have thought that Dave Dombrowski would be in like Flynn there, shall we say, for an old expression, because of the Tony. Yeah, only you and I know what that means, but. Because Tony La Russa is a consultant there with Artie Moreno. But, you know, I think Dombrowski right now is pretty well focused on Nashville and trying to get a team, an expansion team there, and being a leader in that ownership group. So I'm not even sure that he would go if asked, but I wouldn't close that door because he loves being a general manager. So I'm not going to say no, but I don't think it's a foregone conclusion. Obviously, there's a million names out there from Burns and then the two guys in Arizona, Josh Burns, I'm talking about with the Angels, with Jared Porter and Amiel Sade. We've seen Billy Owens mentioned in many places, Logan White, who did a great job with the Dodgers, picking Kershaw and Kemp and Seager, who was the NLCS MVP, and now with the Padres. Absolutely. And then we've got Jason McLeod, John Watson, Dan Jennings. There's a whole list of potential people. And once you see a whole list like that come out, I think it's not clear cut who it's going to be. One name whose name has been in the rumor circles was the ex-Astros GM who's still under suspension, Jeff Luhnow, and I've been told he is not a candidate there for whatever reason. He may be moving on to another entity beyond baseball. I'm not sure, but it doesn't appear that he is a candidate there. But Dombrowski is a candidate. It's not a foregone conclusion, though, so I would consider all those other guys. And one interesting name who's come up with a couple teams that I've heard is Ned Colletti, who was a candidate last time when Billy Epler got the job, and I'm not sure the Dodgers were ready to approve that at that moment. But, you know, he's been in L.A., and he's obviously was a successful general manager in the pre-Andrew Friedman era.
Yeah, love Ned. Hope he gets another opportunity. Certainly a great baseball mind. All right, let's move to the Philadelphia Phillies. They got a lot of questions to answer. Among them is also their president / GM.
Absolutely, and they are looking at player development, and that's why a lot of people think that J.G. Piccolo from the Royals could get a serious look there. They've had no interviews yet, but he has a lot of fans in that organization, so I wouldn't be shocked if he ended up with that job. He's done a nice job with the Royals with their player development, and so he's definitely a candidate. I could see Dan Duquette back there. Obviously, he did an excellent job with the Orioles. He set a long history in baseball. He set up the Red Sox, and Theo took him to the title there. He's got a connection to John Middleton, the owner. Both went to Amherst, so they've worked on different things together there. So I would consider him. And Colletti also with Philly. He worked in Philly as a sports writer, believe it or not, back in the day. And when I talk about the day, we're talking about more than four decades ago, I think. But he could be a fit in Philly. I have heard that Girardi and Pat Gillick clearly have the ear of John Middleton, which you would expect. Girardi, certainly a marquee manager they have, and Gillick won them a title in 2008. And I know that Girardi and Colletti have a long-standing history from the Cubs days, and Colletti actually would have hired Girardi to manage the Dodgers if Girardi hadn't gotten the Yankee job. Girardi's goal was to get that Yankee job, and then Colletti hired Torrey, which is how Girardi had that opening. We're going back a long time now, but that is baseball history for you.
All right, John, the Miami Marlins parted ways with Michael Hill, ending his tenure after 18 years. So now they have an opening. What are you hearing in Marlinland?
Yeah, the interesting thing was the Hill departure. I don't think it was really shocking. One thing that I'm not sure was out there, though, is that Jeter and company had considered making a move earlier. I think MLB had kind of talked to him. He might have made that decision on his own to keep Mike Hill till the end. But, you know, when a new ownership group comes in, they like to have their own guy. And that's basically the main part of it. Certainly Jeter and Sampson had a bad parting, and Sampson and Hill were tied together. I think ultimately Hill did a good job. He leaves them with a good future. They had an excellent year looking at the trades. By and large, obviously the Yelich trade was a disaster to this point. We'll see. It's still got some players to go, but does not look good. But look at the other trades. They wouldn't regret any of them between Stanton and Ozuna and Gordon and Real Muto, netted them Sixto Sanchez and Alcantara, and saved all that money. So, I mean, Mike Hill did a good job, and I'm sure he'll have a job in baseball. I think the names that are out there, I'm not really believing anything until we get a new man in for Miami. But it's up to Jeter and Denbo, and they have a close circle of people who they were friendly with the Yankees, and they've hired a lot of Yankee people. So we shall see. But, you know, Billy Epler's name's been out there. I'll be surprised. He's very close with Brian Cashman, Epler is. And I just don't see that as the way that Jeter would go. I do think Epler in another role, in another city, will do a good job as a GM someday. But obviously, Artie Moreno's a tough owner, and that was a tough fit for him. And then Tim Nehring has been mentioned, maybe a little more possible. He's another Yankee guy. But, you know, I'm not sure that Jeter is going to go with any of Brian Cashman's right-hand men. I just don't see that happening. We shall see. It's a mystery to me beyond right now where they're going to go.
Okay, John, one of the, I wouldn't call them a surprise, but they found their way into the playoffs. Some people picked them, like myself, to be a dark horse in the playoffs, but they also have an opening in the GM spot, and that is the Cincinnati Reds. What are you hearing on the Reds front?
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be a lot of speculation, certainly, about many, including Mike Hill, who's from Cincinnati and just got through with an 18-year career with the Marlins. So, you know, I don't want to rule anything out, but there seems to be some momentum to perhaps just having Nick Kroll do the GM and president job. Dick Williams was a fabulous guy to deal with and got his team into the playoffs, and he just has many other business interests. I know people don't ever want to believe this about anybody, but I think he just decided to do the other business interests. It is a 24/7 job, as we will hear from AJ Preller, and you know, it's not easy. And at this point, I wouldn't be shocked if they just stayed status quo.
All right, let's move to the open coaching vacancies: Boston, Chicago White Sox, Detroit Tigers. The Nationals have some changing in terms of coaching. Let's start with the Red Sox. What are they looking at in terms of managerial change?
Yeah, this one's easy. I'll be surprised if it's not Alex Cora. You can get back to me and tweet me back if I'm wrong. But, you know, I think people believe he deserves a second chance. The ownership loves him. The fans love him. I know it's up to Chaim Bloom, but I do think it will be Alex Cora.
White Sox, they fired Ricky Renteria. What are they looking to do?
Yeah, they definitely want somebody with experience and experience with winning. That is a very, very attractive job. So they'll be have a lot of people looking at it. And the most interesting one is Tony La Russa's, our friend Bob Nightingale, first reported he is a candidate there. He's had other opportunities since he left St. Louis. And so, I'm not going to be shocked if he comes back and manages the White Sox, but it might be a little surprising. Jerry Reinsdorf, the owner, has said, for years, this was his biggest regret, was when he had Tony La Russa as the manager and Hawk Harrelson as the GM, and they weren't really seeing eye to eye, him firing La Russa. And then he went on to a Hall of Fame career with Oakland and St. Louis. I'm still thinking it's not the likeliest of times for him to come back 34 years later. But he and Jerry Reinsdorf are very close, and that will be up to Reinsdorf. Obviously, Rick Hahn, the GM, did a fantastic job there this year. And I think they will, if it's not La Russa, it will be somebody with experience. I do believe they would have a preference for a Spanish-speaking gentleman. La Russa is that, with their core, their team being young star Latin players. So, if Alex Cora doesn't land in Boston, he's a candidate here. That's not a necessity, though. So A.J. Hinch is a candidate there, a strong one. I do believe that. That has been written, nothing new. I do believe that. And, you know, I think Butch Showalter's name has been mentioned. I think Jim Leland and Jim Thome are consultants there and are supporters of Showalter. And I could see that as a possibility as well. But I think we're looking at experience, whether it's La Russa type experience or not, we shall see. But Hinch, strong candidate. Another guy I should mention, Sandy Alomar, who got a little experience this year managing some games for a lot of games for the Indians.
How about the Detroit Tigers?
Yeah, you know what? Pedro Grifol had an interview, and they say it went well. Royals, longtime coach, well-respected. He's got a shot there. Mike Redmond in Colorado, who's the bench coach there, has got a shot. And I think Don Kelly, who was a player with the Tigers and is with the Pirates now as a coach, has got a shot. I think Hinch is, if he doesn't get the White Sox job, I think he'll get that Tigers job, though.
All right. There were a few coaching changes, both for the Nationals and Phillies, NL East opponents. Mm-hmm. What changed in Washington?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. Davey Martinez got his 3-year contract, and he got to pick his coaches. And rather than sticking with coaches that helped him win the World Series, he's changing 3 of them out, as we've discussed on here before. Chip Hale, who I think is a terrific coach. Kevin Long, who's also terrific. And Paul Menhard, who's been in that organization for 14 years, was the pitching coach, beloved. And my understanding is this has actually ruffled a few feathers. Some people with the Nats didn't love the fact that they changed out 3 coaches who were well-liked and helped them win the ring. So, it's a bit of a gamble. Davey has his choice. That's the way it goes. You win a World Series, you get a 3-year deal. And I know that he's looked at Dan Heron, who's had opportunities elsewhere. I'll be surprised if he takes it now. But that is an outside possibility. I think more likely he will not move away from now he's working a little bit with the Diamondbacks and become a full-time coach. So I don't think that's too likely. Dana Lavange is another guy whose name I've heard. And then I'll just skip to Philly. Interesting that Brian Price has decided to retire. He's 58, younger than I am, and he's retiring. Well, good for him, and congratulations. Maybe they hook up with Menhart, who is now not with the Nats anymore after 14 years. But it is interesting to see the Phillies will have 5 pitching coaches in 5 years. That is not a recipe for success.
No, not a recipe for success at all. All right, let's talk about some players. Free agent market this offseason, I imagine, will be pretty tough considering the circumstances of a pandemic and all. What are you hearing?
You are absolutely right. It could be a bloodbath. I do think that the top guys will be fine. The guys who we mentioned who will get qualifying offers, like LeMahieu and Springer and Realmuto and Bauer, they're all going to be fine. But my understanding is there's going to be a lot of non-tenders, and I do think that salaries will go down. It's happened in recent years, once before or twice before. Did not happen for decades after Marvin Miller came in, but obviously the COVID situation has changed the equation, and even teams like the Yankees are off of a season in which they had a very disappointing year, are talking about cutting back, and I am sure they are not alone. In fact, it is the vast majority of teams that will be cutting back.
Trevor Bauer is tweeting at every team possible. His agent, Rachel Luba, says that they're open and will consider all types of deals. How do you see that one playing out?
Oh, yeah, it's going to be an interesting one. I mean, he's basically gone out there and said that he'd like prefer 1-year deal and to keep doing 1-year deal. So I actually texted Rachel Luba yesterday, and she answered me very promptly, very professionally, that they're open to anything, which some could take as they're moving off of that 1-year deal and they're willing to do or maybe even prefer a longer-term deal, which, you know, if he does a 1-year deal off of a Cy Young or potential Cy Young season, he'll be the first, he is a quirky guy. So maybe he will go that route. I don't know, but it was interesting. And then she put it on her answer to me. She put on social media 5 minutes later. So everybody in the world knows he's open to all sorts of things. I know there are teams out there that are hopeful that he's willing to do a 1-year deal. I personally will be surprised if he does do a 1-year deal, but I will say that the Yankees with Cole, who did not get along with him at UCLA, and again, we mentioned Bauer is a quirky guy, a love him or hate him guy, and so I don't think the Yankees will be involved, and we just mentioned how they want to cut back. The Reds would like to bring back Trevor Bauer, and certainly they like that 1-year deal, but Trevor Bauer, 1-year deal is going to be $30 million plus, even in this environment. And that's not something I think the Reds want to go in. So I don't think they're overly optimistic, whether it's 1 year or long term. And again, I think it'll be long term ultimately.
Now, guys like Trey Turner, Yadi Molina, Marcell Ozuna will all be looking for new deals. What's the update on their situation? And who's a team who could use a seasoned vet like Molina if he doesn't want to return back to St. Louis?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. First on Turner, it's a little different. Yes, he is looking for a contract, as you mentioned, a free agent in a few years. And the team and he both want to do it. Really an incredible player that is really highly underrated. We have so many great young shortstops. He's the only qualifying player who in both years averaged 90 mile per hour off the bat, exit velocity, and under over 30 feet per second, as they measure everything these days. I don't know if they measured that in your day, but you would have been pretty good, Tony Gwynn. he tops in both categories, and I do think he wants to stay, and they may try to work out an extension there. They will try to work out an extension there. As far as Ozuna, he put himself in great position with his one-year deal. He had a three-year opportunity with the Reds, had another multi-year opportunity, decided to take the one-year $18 million-something with Atlanta. They cannot give him the qualifying offer since he was saddled with it last year, and now he will be able to take advantage. I'm with you. I love him in Atlanta. He loved it. I'd love to see him be able to stay there and work it out. Yadi Molina, same thing in St. Louis. I mean, he is a legend, in my mind, a Hall of Famer. I'd love to see him finish it out. A little bit of news here. His agent, Melvin Roman, told me he would like to get a two-year deal and play it out till he's 40. He's 38 now. And, you know, whether that's in St. Louis or somewhere else, I think somebody's going to give him a two-year deal. And judging by the fact St. Louis gave him 3 years at $20 million a year, I think ultimately they will give him that two-year deal. I don't think he'll get the qualifying offer. I don't know. That would be an interesting one. It's going to be those four guys that I think, and maybe Semien. But I think it would be great for him and probably good for baseball if Yadi Molina stayed in St. Louis. And I expect that to happen, although in free agency, there are no guarantees, as you know, Tony.
No, there are no guarantees, especially in today's free agency. What's a big-time baseball show without talking about the Yankees? Let's map out the Yankees' offseason plan. As you know, John, it's always World Series or bust for them, and it's been 11 years of them coming up short. What are the franchise's top priorities in this offseason?
Well, their number one priority is DJ LeMahieu. They're going to give him that qualifying offer and then try to extend him. He's going to get more this time. He was fantastic both years with the Yankees. He wants to stay. That ballpark fits him. So I think we're looking at least a three-year deal for DJ LeMahieu, and good for him. He deserves it, maybe even more than 3 years. And I think they'll try with Tanaka. They'll try to bring him back. Their pitching situation will be better next year with Severino back at some point. Herman presumably back, but I do think they'll try with Tanaka. I think they will let Hap and Paxton leave for other pastures, shall we say. But that basically is their plan, and their plan is to cut payroll, which the Yankees don't normally do in a season that is disappointing, but such are the times in which we live, Tony.
One last one, the insider here, you know, with the shortstops we've seen, especially in the playoffs, mentioning, you know, Corey Seager and Carlos Correa, what will the free agent market at the shortstop position look like a year from now? Because you're also going to have Lindor in there.
It's amazing, and I think it has been reordered at this point. I think everybody thought Lindor was at the top, and Baez was number two. And after this, Seager just taking over that NLCS and having the year that he had, incredible season, certainly an MVP candidate. I think that'll probably go to Freddie Freeman. But Seager should be in the top five. If he's not, I apologize for all my writing brethren. Story also had another great year. I think he's moved up. And Correa, as you mentioned, fantastic on the field, in the clubhouse, on every which way, and I think he has moved up as well. So it would be interesting to order those five guys now: Lindor, Baez, Correa, Story, and Seager, all big stars, all huge talents, all nine-figure, and by that I mean $100 billion-plus talents. But for me, the order has changed. I don't know how about for you, Tony. How would you order them now? Can you figure it out? It's pretty tough.
Yeah, no, I think I'm 100% with you. I think the order definitely has changed. I think listen, you really get the best of all worlds when you're talking about him, but I would still have Lindor at the top there, but it's probably Seager, Correa, Baez at this point. I mean, and then you got to add Story in there. Story's probably has an argument to be in those top three as well, the way he's played over the course of his short career. But either way it goes, that market is going to be something amazing to see. Hopefully baseball's in a better spot, so we get a chance to see the free agent swirl happen a little bit better than it has the last couple seasons, for sure. All right, we covered a lot of ground as we get set for the World Series, the 2020 World Series. That's going to be in a neutral site, Globe Life Field, as they call it. We are going to sit back and see how this plays out. That's going to do it for this episode of Big Time Baseball. I'm Tony Gwynn Jr. He's John Heyman. Remember, you can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Tony Gwynn Jr. Again, he's at John Heyman. You can also follow this show, Big Time Baseball. Follow us at RDC_BTB. Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review Big Time Baseball on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you find your favorite podcast. Until next week, we'll catch you later.